The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is proudly presented by Owens Farms Piedmontese.
Let me share a local Spokane secret that everyone needs to know about. Owens Farms Piedmontese beef. Trust me when I say this. You cannot beat this meat. It's tender. It's flavorful. It's some of the best beef you'll ever put into your mouth, period. And to top it off, when you eat it, you can say goodbye to the meat hangovers. That's because Piedmontese beef is lean and has much less cholesterol than your typical supermarket beef. It's a new year. It's time to start living your life with no regrets. Go to ofp.farm to reserve your half or whole order of premium Piedmontese beef today. There's only a limited amount of Owens Farms Piedmontese beef available, so make sure you don't miss out. Go to ofp.farm today.
Let's do it again.
Welcome to a bonus episode of The Perimeter, sponsored by Owens Farms Piedmontese. We got Justin Owens here with us today. Thanks for having us. Thanks for being the title sponsor.
No, thank you for coming out to the farm on, you know, this beautiful Spokane day.
Yeah, it was. It's a little bit chilly out there, I must say. And my favorite part so far, besides seeing all the cows, is as a farmer, my parents were from Montana, both sides. So my grandmother grew up on a farm. Obviously, I'm not anywhere near a farmer. I used to go to the farm every 2 weeks when I was a kid. It's how you just walk through cow poop without even flinching. It was amazing. You know what I mean? I was like, that's a farmer right there. You just, hey, what's going on? And I'm like, you know, trying to cut around. But again, thanks for having us out. Yeah. Thanks for being a sponsor. You know, I usually start the shows off being a Gonzaga podcast. Mm-hmm. What was your affinity for Gonzaga? Any connections when you became a fan? You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, my grandpa was always a fan. Mm-hmm. Two of his kids went to Gonzaga.
What time period, though, was he a fan for Gonzaga? That's important basketball.
Okay, so like, here's where his connection to Gonzaga starts. Because he was born in Spokane. But when Gonzaga lost its football team, the coach, an assistant coach, went out to Lindbergh High School, and they became coaches out there. Uh-oh. My grandpa was the quarterback and the kicker of the team, and they got all of Gonzaga's old equipment, helmets, pads, everything.
So they became the Lindbergh Bulldogs?
they were the Lindbergh Pirates. Pilots, because of Charles Lindbergh. Mm. But he was the final graduating class of Lindbergh, which became Freeman. They were so dominant. They were all farm kids. And then the mindset of bringing that Gonzaga coach out there, they were just tough as nails.
Yeah, they're probably like, we're going to beat everybody now, for sure.
Well, it was crazy. He could do quarterback sneaks whenever he wanted because his whole line was like 6'2" and just burly ranch kids.
Yeah, farm kids.
Mm, yep. I grew up watching games with him. It was actually my uncle that kind of created a real solid interest for me and where I really started watching Gonzaga a ton. It was the year after their Sweet 16 or Elite Eight run, the Cinderella run. Mm-hmm. And my uncle worked for the Postal Service and he would design the stamps or he would work on the copyright for stamps. And he was working on one that was going to be dedicated in Spokane. And Digger Phelps, the men's coach
at Notre Dame. Yep.
He was coming to Spokane and he was like a VIP that my uncle was handling. Mm-hmm. And he came in and he wanted to meet Mark Few, like desperately wanted to meet Mark Few. So my uncle, being an alumni, arranged it. Mm-hmm. They got to meet him and Mark Few gave him some t-shirts.
Oh,
and
that's cool.
My uncle is like a runner. He's done Boston Marathon and everything up and down the East Coast. And he's not really a basketball fan. So he gave me the shirt. And so, boom, I'm like, this is a shirt from Mark Few. Yeah, I'm wearing this every day the rest of my life.
That is awesome. Yeah.
And so it just kind of came from that. And I still have one of the window you know, or the banners from the Spokesman Review. That was Go Zags.
Oh yeah,
from that run.
Yep, the original ones. Yeah, yeah, I remember that. That time period was crazy. Obviously,
yeah.
I remember watching that Florida game in my parents' bedroom, and somebody called. It was, you know, obviously house phones at the time, and my dad goes, "The game's on. Shut up!" And you know, and the tip in. So like, you know, that whole run being from Spokane, yeah, the area is just special to a lot of people because it's just, mm-hmm, like, all of a sudden, like, so I didn't know, I was a ball boy before that at 95, but like, you know, like when we first moved here, I had no idea what Gonzaga even was, mm-hmm, program, whatever. And then to see him like make that deep run, I think it just captured a lot of people's attention. And then obviously it, yeah, stuck. So that's pretty cool. So you've just been a fan ever since?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Loved watching the run and everything attached to that run. Like, mm-hmm, I would do basketball camps because I grew up playing out at, yeah, Freeman, and Mike Thacker, the head basketball coach for the high school, would do camps and stuff. And he would give away t-shirts as part of drills and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I got a basketball from the Final Four run, Four of that 99 tournament.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That's, yeah, cool. So I still got that somewhere.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How old were you in 1998?
Oh man,
were you young? Inappropriate question.
11.
No, yeah. I think it gives context. Like, because I think when people think about being Gonzaga fans, like, you're like, well, I mean, I feel like when I was during the mid 2000s, it was like, it was almost like we jumped on a bandwagon, but it wasn't really, mm-hmm, a bandwagon to jump on. It was just like they got good, and, mm-hmm, then like,
yeah.
And when you get that when you're so young, it just goes with you for the rest of your life. It's just like, it's, yeah, instant fandom, and you keep that for the rest of your life. That's why there's so many Cowboys fans, is because they all, in our age, because they were so good in the 90s.
Yeah.
And the same goes for like people our age now, is just like, there's so many Gonzaga fans because of that run. Yeah.
What's fascinating is there's multi-generational fans, I guess is the right, or, yeah, you know, there's people that are started being a fan in like 2010,
mm-hmm,
you know what I mean? The, yeah, teams after me are like, oh, you know, like, hey, I started following you there. And then they can name most of the players after, or their favorite teams after. And then they forget about Santangelo,
yeah,
Calvert,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so like, sure, you're like, wow, it's, you know, it's been 20 plus years, but there's a lot of teams and a lot of like, you know, circle of players that you're like, man, I forgot about that guy. Mm-hmm. Or you're like, I can see why, you know, kids like, you know, I've had people, you know, kids at high schools, but like, do you remember, you know, I'll reference like Blake Stepp, and they're like, who's that? Right. And I don't mean that, yeah, in a bad way, but like, you know, cause it's like Gonzaga's been good for so long and so, mm-hmm, dominant in this area that like an 18-year-old kid doesn't remember us playing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure. Like, yeah.
That's a pretty wild, yeah, thing to have, you know, just come all of a sudden from that 1999 run. So
that is, it's
interesting.
It is really interesting.
The other funny little connection was my grandpa did a little like real estate development, and he built a house up on Legacy Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, B Mike was a realtor up there.
Oh, okay.
So my grandpa worked with him, and he'd see him a bunch, and he loved him.
Yeah.
And he loved the Gonzaga connection,
mm-hmm,
but he had only great things to say to, yep, him and about him. And
yeah, B Mike's, yeah, awesome. He actually looked, when I was first buying in Spokane, he helped me. It was just, then he got the job as assistant, and he's going to be the next guy to get when Fuey retires.
Right, yeah. Like,
good career move there, bud. Yeah. You know, good job. So it's interesting.
I actually have a really good story to tell about your grandfather. When we were recording in the old space on, in the old location on like Howard Street, mm-hmm, and we recorded a pod, like Adam had done a podcast with Mark Few. And John Stockton in that space. And he sat in that chair, and he said to me, he's just like, am I sitting in the same chair,
yeah,
that John Stockton and Mark Few sat
That's
in?
Awesome.
And I was like, you are. And he's just like, well, and he was like, he was asking me like, what was it like? Like listening to like,
yeah,
Adam and John and Mark talk. I was just like, it was just like,
Two guys
talking. Yeah, it was great
conversation.
It made him so happy to sit in the chair that Stockton had been sitting in like earlier that day.
Yeah,
he loved Stockton. Mm. I mean, 100%. And he and I would watch Sonics basketball in the 90s, and we would watch the Jazz and the Bulls.
Like, yeah,
but you had to love John Stockton if you were from Spokane. You would watch his games.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of a good transition to Owens Farms. Like, so we're here, we're actually recording this podcast at your farm. We just did a tour. Your grandfather started this farm back in when? Yeah, when did this farm,
in the 60s? Yeah. Yeah, it started off. You know, some of the pictures in here of the horses, but it was three farms, and he had the main one up the road from us, this one, and then a training track out on 195 where he had a whole, I think it was a half mile, but yeah, it was the thoroughbreds, and then got into the cattle behind us. Yeah. And now we're, and then he retired, and now we're in the cattle again. Same Piedmontese.
Yeah. Where did the, like, him bringing Piedmontese start? Like, what interest to him bringing Piedmontese to Spokane, Washington had to him?
You know, initially he had never heard of Piedmontese. After the horses, he got back into cattle. He bought a 200 head herd of Simmental, and some guy that knew of him through the horses saw that he was retiring, and he kept calling the house and talking to my grandma and trying to tell her about Piedmontese. And she wasn't having it. She didn't have any interest in what the guy was telling her. And he kept calling so much. She told my grandpa, like, you better call him back
just to get him off.
We're disconnecting the phones or something. You know, I'm leaving. So my grandpa finally chatted with him and heard the whole spiel. And he was skeptical because a lot of the claims about the breed just go in the face of what is very conventional wisdom for beef cattle, beef in general. And so he called the USDA and got in touch with their meat animal research center in Nebraska. And they had Piedmontese bulls there. They were breeding them to Angus cows, and they were putting them in side-by-side trials. And he was like, is it true? And they're like, yeah. How is it true? And they're like, we don't know. So eventually the USDA around 99, so that would have been in the 80s, around 99, they identified an inactive gene present in Piedmontese. And that's kind of what a lot of the unique traits are tied to with the beef.
So yeah, explain those unique traits for those, because I'm all of our listeners do not know what Piedmontese cattle are.
Sure.
Like what is so unique about Piedmontese?
Well, it actually is something that's very relevant with athletes and bodybuilders and stuff. It's so the gene itself affects myostatin production, and myostatin is a chemical that's in our bloodstream all the time. We produce it, and it acts as a governor for the protein that we eat. So when the protein hits our bloodstream, the myostatin will bond with it, flush it out of our system to regulate how much protein contributes to lean muscle production.
Okay.
So a lot of people try to figure out how to, you know,
increase that effect. Yeah.
So shut down myostatin production. So their myostatin is incapable of bonding with protein. So it's present, it's there, it's functioning, or it's being produced. It just can't function. So all the protein they eat in their feed
goes
towards more natural, normal muscle production, which ends up being, when you take it from like live animal to the cut and wrapped pieces of meat, it's about 30% more muscle mass. The other thing that was unique that changed is a normal muscle fiber for a bull or a cow or something is the thickness of a human hair. Piedmontese muscle fibers are 1/16 of that. And the connective tissue is almost non-existent. And usually that's what makes meat real tough and chewy, is the connective tissue, which is mostly made up of collagen, which is kind of good for us. It's good for us to eat collagen. But what you end up with Piedmontese is a really densely packed muscle group, and it's just extremely tender and it's extremely lean, which flies in the face of a lot of conventional wisdom saying you need marbling and fat and all this for it to be tender and flavorful. And this is actually a really flavorful meat without any fat at all. So it confuses people a lot.
What's the hardest part of like getting that message out? You know what I mean? Because to the American consumer, you know, there's always barriers or, you know what I'm saying? I'm just like, what's this? Oh, if I don't know it right away, it's not as good or whatever. Like, is that a problem that you see, or like trying to get the brand, or what it is, just the education part of it?
It's 100% the education. Cause aside from convincing people to try the beef that's really lean, it also, even if they bought it and they go to cook it, it cooks 50% faster.
Yeah.
So it's really a delicate and tricky beef to cook. It's very easy to ruin it.
I low and slow did the first time. I'm not even kidding. And I'm glad you told me to, but it was great. We had it on Christmas night. We had some steaks, but I low and slowed it. And I'm glad you told me. It's like, don't go too fast, but very good piece of meat.
Well, I'm glad. And it, you know, it's trial and error, you know, and even with the stuff I gave you, it was 100% Piedmontese. Mm-hmm. Most of what's out there is half. But what's crazy is back in the day in Italy, the butchers would sell fully finished Piedmontese beef as milk veal. And they would sell the shoulders as rumps or something. Like, it was just highway robbery because they could charge a premium. But the meat quality and the characteristics totally were one-to-one with veal. It was just like, instead of having this tiny cut, it was massive.
So then, makes sense.
Yeah.
About that, like the origins of this cattle too, like it is thousands and thousands of years old, correct? Like, they come from Italy, and that's where it makes them unique of how they're disease resistant. It starts there, right?
The geography definitely plays a large part. I don't know, researchers or scientists have been able to trace the origins of this breed along with five other Italian white-haired breeds to this mass migration of cattle out of Pakistan about 25,000 years ago. And they can date it that way based on cave drawings and depictions of the cattle. And so when this mass migration occurred, they left Pakistan, went into Europe, and they hit this marshy terrain at the base of the Alps, and they just couldn't migrate any further. So they started crossbreeding with native European bison, a rock. So you had this Bos indicus, Bos taurus cross, you know, hybrid, and over thousands of years, in these little pocketed regions that are kind of geographically separated from each other, these unique breeds with different traits kind of developed. And Piedmontese was one of them. And this gene through the years just turned off naturally. There's another breed in Italy that's the tallest breed in the world at 6 foot or 6 foot two at the shoulders.
Jeez.
They're just huge. And I think the meat is a good quality, but the animal has so much bone, the yield isn't great. So they developed, you know, grazing at 8,000 feet in the Alps and then down on these Mediterranean lowlands.
I just think the thing about the Piedmontese that makes me, I think it's just crazy, is just how much more meat comes off of it. Like, compared to like Angus or Hereford, right? Like, that's the biggest difference. And like, and you also were talking about like in premium Piedmontese, which is like crossbred with Angus and Hereford, like that also yields more. Like, when people are looking for Piedmontese wherever they're at, because like not everyone is in Spokane or they're somewhere else, like when they're looking at premium Piedmontese, like what are they getting?
It's hard to say. So the way we track crosses with Piedmontese is that specific gene. So each parent, each 100% Piedmontese has two copies of that gene. And when they have a calf, they pass on one copy of it. A lot of premium Piedmontese products, DNA verify that the calf has one copy of that gene. So that's kind of what enables, you know, in those animals, 15% more meat production, higher tenderness, some of those traits that are great for the beef. And it's great because, and it's needed because there's so few Piedmontese in the US and Canada. Mm-hmm. There's like 8,000 total.
Mm. Wow.
And that, and to put it into perspective, that's the US and Canada. Comparing it to Angus, which is over 60 million in the US.
Yeah.
It's just, we're tiny. Yeah. So when you could take a Piedmontese bull, turn him out with an Angus herd, and he can breed 50 cows, that's pretty great. That's a lot of extra meat production per carcass. And
And better flavored beef. I mean, and better flavored beef.
Better, I would say, eating experience overall. Yeah.
Yeah. When we talk about the Piedmontese and the 100% Piedmontese and we compare it to Wagyu or Kobe, like your biggest goal in all of this, and one of the reasons why you sponsored the podcast was to just get the name out there, the name Piedmontese out there, saying that word over and over and over again, because you want to live in a world where Piedmontese is in that same breath.
Yeah.
And can you explain like why is it so, like we already talked about why it is so premium, but like why is it so important to you to do that, to just get it out there?
You know, I wanted someday, when I got into this, I wanted to retire where the beef was just readily available. Because it's the one thing I haven't really touched on is that it's the most nutrient dense beef.
Mm-hmm.
It's the highest protein, the lowest fat, the highest omega 3, omega 6, and the lowest LDL cholesterol, elevated HDL cholesterol. Like, it's almost a perfect meat. Mm-hmm. And it's not even just the healthiest beef. It's healthier than skinless chicken, turkey, salmon. Mm. It's just so unique.
Yeah.
And there's just so few of it, people don't know. But it's a great thing. It's a great fuel for athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really healthy. There's people that we've had working on the farm, like woodcutters and stuff, and they have Crohn's disease and they can't eat beef. And my grandpa would give them beef to try. Boom. They could eat it without any issues.
Wow.
And I'm not saying it's like a
miracle
thing, you know,
but yeah, it's healthier. Thing. It is. Yeah. It's healthier. And in today's society, obviously people are more educated on what they put into their bodies. Sure. They'll understand, you know, you have to make the right choices, all that stuff being said. So like, you know, I commend you for trying to be like, hey, this, if you're going to have a steak or beef and you're a health conscious person, and we all try to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the right route to go. And, that's, it's interesting. Just, the whole fascination with, you know, how much goes into this type of meat compared to, you know, just going to other slaughterhouse and stuff like that. And then looking at the cows, I'm like, that looks pretty good. I'm like, pretty good on my plate. You know what I mean? But, I don't know, man. It's just, I'm so far removed from being like a farmer. And I mean that in the nicest way. So I'm just like, God, you guys work your ass off, man. Holy smokes. You know, like, so it's just fascinating. It's good stuff.
I wanted to tell when you introduced me to Piedmontese and I came out here the first time and you gave me the beef, and I had been eating beef. And I don't know if you have this, Adam, when you eat some beef, like, it just makes you feel like crap.
It's heavy.
Yeah. And when I had your beef for the first time, I was just like, I didn't feel that. Like, I didn't feel that heaviness. Like, and I think that's like what drew me to it. Like, originally, it's just like, I like eating beef, but I won't buy a steak.
You don't want to have a massive porterhouse every night, but you want a porterhouse every once in a while.
Right.
Like I said, we had it on Christmas night. I had it before when you gave it to us, and it is extremely lean. So like, when you first look at it, you're like, oh, okay. I got to cook, like you said, and you told me like, cook it slower, but you're right. It's like more dense. So like, when you're the smaller piece of meat on your plate, it fills you up more. And I'm not kidding. Like, my kids even said that. It was like, you know, we were doing the small steaks. That's about the size my kids would eat anyway. Mm. They're like, Dad, this is like, there's more in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, swear to God. So I was like, it's just a different profile when you look at the meat too. You're like, it's just different.
Well, and I don't know if you guys felt this way. Like, I'll eat it almost every day, like ground beef. I'll have ground beef ready to go in the fridge. But it's like, I'll eat it and I'll feel really full, but I'll get hungry sooner than if I'm eating something else. Mm-hmm. It's like my body just burns it a little quicker.
Yep.
This would be a great breakfast, like meat to have, like to have like a
breakfast steak or something.
Or you like put in your eggs.
A 4 ounce or six ounce breakfast steak. You know what I'm saying? And then you just, it's light and you get your protein and you know what I mean? Instead of having a 12 ounce T-bone.
Kidding. How do you like to enjoy it?
I like doing ground beef a lot. Mm-hmm. I think it's really an undervalued piece of the carcass. Mm. Everybody wants cuts and, you know, roasts, I'd say, are second tier. But it's like people, I think because ground beef is so plentiful, mm-hmm. there just isn't this greater appreciation for it. But you can use it in so many different ways.
Yeah.
It's so versatile. I love it. But I was going to say, like, with the Kobe stuff and all that, like, what kind of pushed me in this direction a little bit a couple of years ago, like, thinking about it, was I've had Spokane chefs come out to the farm and given them tours and talked to them about the beef. And, you know, a couple of these chefs have been flown to Japan to be corded and treated and served, you know, A5 and olive wagyu. And I'm like, so how often do you eat it? And they're like, oh, like once a year, maybe twice a year. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why? I'm like, well, it's really heavy. It's really, you know, greasy and it has the whole mouth coating in it, you know? And I'm like, is it really top tier if you only want to eat it once or twice? That's
a very good point.
And,
very good point.
And the other half of it was the food pyramid. It's like every food pyramid, the amount of recommended beef keeps shrinking. And I'm like, well, that's based on commercial beef. Mm-hmm. And commercial beef is more and more fatty. They want it more marbled. I'm like, if that was based on Piedmontese, that might be the largest part of the pyramid. It's just so healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen like articles or stuff recently where it's like Lucky Charms and Honey Nut Cheerios are healthier.
Yeah. That's a whole different podcast. Anyway. And we're going to get into politics and geopolitical.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me started.
Whoops.
Everybody will be like, where's your tinfoil hat? But also it's like, when the federal government, let's just go on one quick point, in the mid-2000s, I believe it was, when they said pizza is a vegetable when they were doing the school lunches, that's when you knew the whole system was
messed up. Wild. Yeah, that's so true.
Okay, so when they label it like that, it's like, what's really behind this?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about beef too. In the 70s, like there was a big push from America. That story real quick.
Well, no, I mean, it's out there. I mean, it's just common knowledge. Like, so in the 70s, we had, the U.S. had peak beef consumption at about 92 pounds per person annually. Right now, we're at about 50 pounds per person. But when they had peak consumption, they had peak dissatisfaction with beef products. And so all the stakeholders within the industry were like, we're going to have a major problem. And there, I feel like there's this irrational competition with turkey and chicken and pork, like the other proteins. And, you know, to me, like, I eat chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I like turkey and pork.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
But they looked at why were consumers unhappy with our product. And it wasn't flavor. It wasn't quantity or availability. It was the color. It was strictly chewy toughness. And so they were like, what is causing it to be really chewy and tough? Mm-hmm. It's the connective tissue. What can we do about that? Can we shrink the connective tissue? Like, what steps can we take? And fat. Fat deposits can break up the connective tissue. So when you cut into it and you bite into it, there's less connective tissue holding to each other and they're holding to fat, and fat breaks up really easily.
Mm-hmm.
So then instead of globs, then it was, all right, let's get more thinly veined fat, so hence intramuscular fat, and marbling. And so through the later, I don't know, 3 or 4 years of the 70s, they're doing all of this legwork. And in the 80s, the USDA debuts a new grading system that focuses less or doesn't even focus on yield grade, which was the primary factor in grading a carcass. Toss that out the window, and now it's fat cover and fat content, intramuscular fat. Those are the two.
So basically grades. How they labeled it changed the whole industry is kind of what you're saying.
Yep. So it emphasized fat production, intramuscular fat. And so, then you have the whole push with where's the beef and beef, it's what's for dinner. And you have that spinning off of, you know, this new grading system and trying to get everybody on board. Cause up until then, Americans ate really lean meat. It was just tougher and chewier.
Yeah. That is fascinating to really think, because now it's like you said, marbling, and but it's probably easier for those massive farms to process steroid, all that. You know what I'm saying? Like, industrialized food production, all that stuff. Interesting.
Ingredients for fattening an animal are cheaper than ingredients for protein building.
Oh, absolutely.
An animal, I've had people that have asked me, you know, what does our beef grade at? What does Piedmontese grade at? Is it, you know, really great? And I'm like, it doesn't even get registered on Prime, Select, and Choice. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even, it would be the worst grade if it went through, because it's so lean.
It's fascinating.
It is, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just how they label things, and then how, you know, the definition of what is good.
Yeah.
Mm.
Changes the whole industry, changes people's perspective.
Yeah.
Because here's the mind-boggling thing. Like, A5 Wagyu beef is tougher than 100% Piedmontese beef, or even half Piedmontese beef. So there's a test called the Warner-Bratzler shear force instrument or device.
Sounds like a Air Force thing or something. G-forces.
But it's basically a blade that cuts into a cube of meat, and it records the force required to make the initial cut and then the continuing cut. Mm-hmm. So Piedmontese requires the least PSI to make an initial cut and continuing cut. And I've had people ask, oh, well, what's the tenderness grade? And I'm like, it actually goes beyond the tenderness grade, because after a certain threshold, our palate can't discern any difference below a certain PSI. That
makes sense.
And so it's literally so tender, you can't grade it across animals because they're all below that threshold. Hmm.
Wow. So if USDA decided to like change their grading and it was all based on being lean meat, like Piedmontese would be the best.
Or even nutrition.
Nutrition.
Nutrition, leanness, tenderness, like any of the other metrics. Even going back to the 1970s method of yield grade, Piedmontese would be number one.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
It is fascinating.
It really is. Like,
well, that's when I talk about it with them, I just like, it always blows my mind that like, why I just don't understand. Like, why I don't, like when we talk about crossbreeding and having it yield more beef, I'm just like, well, that's a problem in the world. Like, we're gonna get to a scarcity of food. Like, if you had an animal that makes more meat, why not breed more of these animals? Yeah. Why don't make more of these animals if there's more meat coming off of them? And they're easier to raise, and they're that always just kind of blows my mind. But like, back to the Owens Farms and what you're doing here with your beef.
Well, I was going to say, that was why I wanted to get into it, was I wanted to get more ranchers raising Piedmontese, because I thought it's such a smart financial proposition for them. It's lower cost inputs because the animal is so efficient. They don't get stressed. Yeah. They convert feed better and then they produce more. Mm-hmm. Even if they kept their herd and just bred them to Piedmontese, they can increase their meat production by 15% in 1 year.
Wow.
And this was something my grandpa knew really well. Just, he grew up in Oklahoma as well, but he knew ranchers. I mean, they're very set in their ways.
Yeah.
And they all have Black Angus cattle or Red Angus cattle or Hereford. And there is this stigma around white haired cattle because it is a very like Indian subcontinent tropical breed. Mm-hmm. And typically they're very large, very bony, and very lean, but very, very tough meat. Mm. The fact that Piedmontese has tender meat, you know, it's odd. Mm-hmm. So they're very against turning out these white-haired animals with their herds. Mm. And it just takes time. And so I thought now there's younger people. We're at a threshold where, you know, ranchers are the oldest average age profession in the country. And they're aging out, younger people coming in. They're looking at the numbers and the science a little more, yeah. How to make their operations
more efficient. Yeah.
And I thought that's where Piedmontese will shine through.
Mm. Yeah.
But now I'm leaving that behind and
yeah, no kidding. You're starting your own private label beef company, which will focus completely on 100% Piedmontese. But what everyone, you know, what we've been promoting and talking about on the podcast is the beef that you're selling right now is premium Piedmontese, right?
Yeah. So it's our final batch of half Angus, half Piedmontese. Everything from here out is going to be 100%. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to make this more available to everybody here.
Mm-hmm.
And how can they do that? How can they find what is the pitch to someone that is looking to maybe buy a quarter or half or whole Piedmontese? Like why? Like I think there are a lot of people out there that buy cattle, buy the whole or half and whatnot. Like, why should they buy yours and not that half?
Oh, I mean, kind of the reasons we've been talking about: the flavor, the eating experience, mm-hmm. the texture, you know, tenderness, healthfulness. And I mean, my whole operation is an open book. Mm-hmm. Anybody can come see what we're feeding. They can see the living conditions.
No, that's actually a very good point. I mean, not to cut you off, but just going to see the cows and they're not in some, you know, massive plant getting, you know what I'm saying? Like it's a real thing. Yeah. Like, and you're like, oh, I can see the heifer or whatever. And I'm, you know,
well, and you can pick it out.
It's out in the open and it's living. You know what I'm saying? It's not just in a boxed industrial farm packaged in wherever and then moved to here and then moved back, blah, blah, blah. Like you get some freshness involved with that. So,
well, and I got that idea, like letting people come and really check it out when we were in Italy in 2015. And there's this Piedmontese fast food restaurant in Turin. And on the cash register, they have the phone number for the farm to go schedule tours. And like everything in their restaurant, the vegetables, the pork is all raised on their farm or on their neighbor's farms. And so, it's like going to Seattle and going to McDonald's and it's like, oh, I can go visit a farm that's 30 minutes away and see where all this came from.
I mean, I would encourage anyone, if you're listening, like come and take a tour of the farm, see the cattle. Like it's a really cool place to come and like experience what you could eat. And I'll say this on this podcast is that if you do come here, there's a chance that you might leave with some Piedmontese if you say you came through the perimeter.
No, I like people being able to try it and cook it for themselves with their own recipes. Mm-hmm. That's important to like with beef. It's not really a product you can look at or hear about. You really have to taste
try
it.
No, that's a good point.
It's got to be that real world test.
I think that about covers it. I appreciate you. I got to say, thank you so much for, you know, being a sponsor on the podcast. Like me and Adam would not be doing this without you. So
appreciate it.
I loved season one, really. And that was what it came down to. I kept asking him when season two was going to hit. I was like, whatever I can do to make it happen.
No, we appreciate it. And it's fun. Coming out here and seeing this stuff. Like I said, I came from a family of farmers. Like I used to my grandmother's farm for 2 weeks a year. So I try to claim to that a little bit, but it's nice to be like, there's some beef out here. You know what I'm saying? There's some cows. That's what they look like. They don't just grow in the store in a package. You know what I mean? So we appreciate you having us out and,
thank you guys.
Really. Yeah. And definitely, if you're thinking about ordering, please reach out to Justin. He can walk you through it. He is he's an open book, like he said. So please reach out.
Let's do it again.